Hello, it's May 17th, and you're listening to The LaRouche Show. My name is Bruce Director, and I will be your host. So we're doing The LaRouche Show this week from the headquarters in Houston, Texas, of the Keisha Rogers for Senate campaign, because in 10 days from now, on May 27th, there's going to be an election here which is going to shake, has the potential to shake world politics. May 27th is the runoff for the Democratic primary to choose the Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate seat from Texas, who will then challenge John Cornyn. But the election on Tuesday, May 27th, is the key election that to watch, because this is a chance for Keisha Rogers, a well-known LaRouche Democrat, two-time Democratic nominee for the 22nd congressional race district in Texas, to win the spot to challenge Cornyn, and in doing so could will send a message to the entire Democratic Party and to the nation that the voters of Texas and the constituency base of the Democratic Party are fed up with Obama and are fed up with the crisis, the economic crisis, suffering under the economic crisis which is facing this country, and are ready for a change in leadership. Keisha is challenging a Wall Street hack named David Alamiel, who has spent over $10 million of his own money, most of it of his own money, to try and buy this seat from Texans. But despite all that corruption, Keisha is running a hot race which has the Democrats shaking in their boots. And we'll be discussing this and the implications of this election over the next hour with my good friend Harley Schlanger, who is a Western State spokesman for Lyndon LaRouche and a longtime activist and political operative in Texas politics. We're hoping we can be joined by Keisha Rogers if she's available, but she's out stumping right now in San Antonio. So while we're waiting for Keisha, if she can join us, otherwise we'll just talk to Harley, who's here on the line with me. Harley, are you there?
Yeah, good afternoon, Bruce.
So it's good to talk to you. Actually, we're, as most of you, our listeners know, we're probably switching roles here. Harley has interviewed me many times, so I'm sitting in as host and Harley's the guest, so we'll see how this goes. But anyway, Harley, why don't we start out by giving our listeners somewhat of a overview as to what's happening here in Texas around this election, what the implications of it are, and how the things look, prospects for the campaign.
Well, I think when you talk about an overview, there are two things you have to keep in mind. One is the present strategic crisis in which this campaign is taking place. And then secondly, what Lyndon LaRouche had discussed with Keisha, myself, and a couple of others as to what this campaign should be, what it must do to intervene in the strategic situation. So to just start briefly with the strategic situation, you have a crisis of profound implications for everyone on the planet, with a danger of war, including thermonuclear war, not limited to the insane policies of Obama, who's been pushing in this direction as a puppet of the British Empire, but the British Empire, realizing that Obama's been ineffective in actually outflanking Putin on the way to war, that is, Obama's been repeatedly outflanked, that there's a whole other operation, which is really part of this, but a bigger operation from the British Empire directly, to launch a war. And so we're in this situation where the trigger would be, as the financial situation collapses, the financial system collapses, they're about to go for the bail-in, which is sort of like the thermonuclear bomb for the financial system. So if you have the bail-in option, meaning they're giving up on holding the financial system together, their only alternative is war, which they don't really, when we're talking about these British financial oligarchs, we're talking about the Zeus idea. You can destroy civilization. That's what they intend. They don't care to wipe out 6 billion people or even all 7 billion people, if they can't control things, they'll pull the plug. So that's the strategic situation. Now, what we decided when we launched Keisha's campaign, and this was very much at the center of Keisha's thinking, is that because of this crisis, we can't run a normal campaign. Now, we would never do that, but we couldn't allow for normal campaigns to exist. The usual hot-button issues, gays, guns, and God, you know, the typical campaigns that we've had recently of taxes, budgets, which really are nothing but rhetoric. What we had to do was change the subject from the beginning. And because Texas is such an important state in the nation, and by linking it with California, which is the other most important state in the nation, we can raise the real issues that have to be addressed, starting with the impeachment of Obama, but then move into a whole new realm of possibility, which would be by removing Obama and crushing the British Empire with Glass-Steagall, we can not only get out of the war situation, but start to work on a promising future. So those two points really frame the campaign, intervening into this incredible strategic crisis and doing it in such a way as to change the subject in the entire electoral process. And in Texas right now, the only issue in the Senate race is, do you want to vote for a joker who's clinging to Obama, like a guy clinging to the life raft on the Titanic? Or do you want to support someone who is not only known as calling for the impeachment of Obama, but has articulated a series of policy measures that would solve the crisis? And so we have changed the subject.
Yeah, okay. So let's start with that. You say that Keisha has stood strong on policy issues which have really addressing the crises. And I know that one of the most important crises facing Texas, which is something that LaRouche has been addressing nationally, is the killer drought situation here, which is happening actually in all the states west of the Mississippi to one degree or another, but it's particularly bad in Texas and California, which are our two biggest agricultural producing states. So why don't you tell us how that is actually affecting the election campaign and how that's become an issue in the campaign?
Well, it was nowhere in sight on anybody's radar except for Keisha, which is actually the first most important point. Here you have a drought which not only affects agriculture, but affects the whole of society, including both of these states are major industrial states. So you have a drought where farmers are being forced out of business. They can't plant. The state of California cannot provide water for the irrigation systems that are absolutely essential for producing somewhere close to 40% of our leafy green vegetables consumed in the United States. I think it's about 60% of fruits and nuts. Then you add California and Texas, which are both important beef states. People think about Texas and cattle, but California has a very large dairy industry which is going out of business. Then in Texas, the food production includes a lot of food for animals, and that's not being produced. And as a result, the cattle herd in this country is at the lowest level since 1951. Now, food prices, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, are going up. I think it was 1.9% for the first 3 months of this year. So we're beginning to see a food inflation. It's actually much larger than that and will get much bigger. But you would think, with losing our cattle herds, losing our vegetables and fruits and nuts, losing our dairy and beef sector, that there would be an issue here, that this would be discussed. And of course, Obama went out to California, and what he basically said is it's man-made climate change that's causing it, and people should conserve. And he gave a little bit of money to help about a small number of farmers get lunch and a cup of coffee. So when Lyndon LaRouche intervened and Keisha took this up as a theme of her campaign, we initially were moving toward adopting NAWAPA, the North American Water and Power Alliance. But it's become clear in the course of the campaign that the original design of NAWAPA would not function because of the changes in both the economy and also the solar system since it was first devised. And so we have to come up with immediate solutions. And so Keisha has had two conferences together with Michael Steger, who's running in San Francisco, to take up the question of how you deal with a drought. And the most important question, Bruce, is not simply what technologies or where there's water or how you find it, but the bigger question, the collapse of scientific education, of scientific thinking, of investment in the technologies that are stepping stones toward new technologies to address these things. If we're going to harness water, for example, from up above the atmosphere where there are rivers of water, that's going to require completely new thinking. But we don't have that.
That brings up the exact a really important point, which I want to explore with you, which is new thinking. When you're talking about picking somebody who's qualified to be in the United States Senate, you have the general perception is we should pick somebody who reflects the popular opinion of the population, which, of course, has proven to be a disaster because we've done that for a long time now, especially since the assassination of Kennedy, and things have gotten worse and worse and worse. Now, Keisha has been stressing that the issue in her campaign is to finally shake up Washington by having somebody who knows how to think, and which has become a major focus of her campaign in terms of reaching out to the population, that it's not just enough to have a certain program, be able to delineate certain programs, but you need somebody who has the foresight to be able to solve the problems which aren't even on the horizon yet. So why don't you tell us how Keisha's actually addressing that in the course of the campaign?
Well, that, of course, is demonstrated by the way she took up this drought question, because initially the centerpiece of her campaign was NWAPA. Now, we still have aspects of NWAPA that can work and that will help, but it's not going to produce a drop of water for the drought of 2014. So you need to have a flexibility and, as you say, new thinking, which is what was introduced by Mr. LaRouche in a webcast about 4 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, which then Keisha picked up, this question of nuclear desalination, the thermonuclear economy, which is ultimately a solution for more than just water. And then the question of how do you tap into the water that exists up above the atmosphere. So this gives you an example, I think, of the kind of flexibility in thinking which is characteristic of someone who does think from the future rather than from the past. Now, the importance here is that it's not just that we're going to lose food and water, because that's something that is an immediate, urgent crisis that nobody really has considered. And when Keisha brings this up, the initial reaction is somewhat shock, but then it forces people to think about a really important question, which is, if my family is going to lose the ability to eat, why is nobody talking about this?
That's a good point. I mean, is her opponent or anybody in the Democratic Party addressing this issue?
Well, the only thing the Democratic Party says is that it's climate change caused by man. And then both the Democrats and the Republicans, and by Democrats I mean the Obama Democrats and the Republicans, are doing other things which are insane given the water shortage, starting with fracking, the extensive use of water to break up rock formations, shale formations, to squeeze some oil and gas out of the ground, when, in fact, if you had an aggressive campaign for advanced fission technologies, nuclear fission, as well as research to bring fusion online, we wouldn't need to do this. This is going into a backward technology. Again, the future requires that we have a more efficient energy source. And so Keisha brings these questions up, and you get the typical response from the Democratic Party, which actually fears that people will break out of their subservient little me mentality. What they say is, oh, Keisha talks about going into space. She talks about fusion economy. These are pipe dreams. No one can relate to this. The fact is, people know there are no solutions in the existing technologies. They're quite excited when they hear that there's a different way of thinking. Now, you ask about the Democratic Party. Her opponent in the Democratic Party is a guy who made his career through dental clinics sold to a hedge fund run by proteges of Michael Milken. He was a major contributor to the Republican Party up until 2008. While he was running his dental clinic, he was caught in a cover-up of sexual harassment by his chief financial officer, which he not only covered up by firing the four women who brought charges, but he posted work rules that essentially blamed the women by insisting that his female employees must not wear sleeveless blouses or dresses.
Well, that's pretty funny at a time when the Democratic Party is supposedly talking about how they're the party of women and they're running a candidate for governor of a female candidate for governor of Texas, who made herself a famous figure, I guess, by having a filibuster on an abortion bill in the state legislature. So it sort of goes against the Democratic Party's image as the party of women.
Well, and it shows you what's wrong with these images or these the way they use these hot-button issues like abortion or women's rights or equal pay as a way of obfuscating the bigger issue, which is that equal pay at minimum wage jobs is not really a great thing. The question is, where are the jobs of the future? How are we going to break this cycle that goes before 2008 but really took off after 2008? Of employing people in low-wage, temporary, and part-time jobs and calling that a jobs program. And Keisha's opponent is a total supporter of the rhetoric of Obama. And I think this is important because Obama's policies come from the British Empire and Wall Street, as do the policies of Keisha's opponent in the Senate race. So he pretends to be an opponent of Wall Street while everything he's doing is supporting the existing policies that Wall Street has imposed on the government. So what Keisha has done is to just, let the story speak for itself. This guy is a multimillionaire who has no policies, claims to be something he's not, and then won't debate because he doesn't want to be challenged. And this not debating is important because the one thing we know about voters in Texas, and there aren't too many of them, very few people have been voting, but about the people of Texas, is that they assume politicians don't care about them, don't know that they're suffering, and don't want to know what they think, and certainly don't want to have an honest discussion with them. And Keisha breaks that mold. Keisha is very, you know, you could use the word charismatic, but the charisma comes from something different. She's very empathetic. It becomes clear to people when she talks to them that she's speaking from her heart and her mind and that she's committed to bringing them into the process of acting on their own to create a better life for themselves and their family and for the nation. And so I think this is something that's very different than just going out there and talking about things people agree with and that, you know, try to become a candidate because you're a good fellow or something like that. Her opponent's a sleazebag, but he's may have been inaccessible so that most people don't know how bad he is. But when they see Keisha, and we have a lot of radio ads going out, she's been on television, she's doing campaign events, rallies all over the state, people immediately say, whoa, you're different. And that's really crucial in this campaign, because those people who see that now have a responsibility to go out and work with Keisha to get the vote, to win the runoff, which will send the biggest shock effect to Washington and internationally. The rejection of Obama by his own party in the state of Texas.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that happened twice before, of course, in a congressional district here in the Houston area, but that's nothing compared to what Keisha's doing right now in a statewide race. And we're talking a lot about the Democratic Party here and what the Texas Democratic Party, what a disaster it's been. I guess the last Democrat to carry the state as a presidential candidate was Jimmy Carter. There hasn't been a statewide, the Republicans have controlled the state houses and controlled all the statewide offices over the last decade and a half, or maybe even longer.
Actually, 20 years. The last statewide Democrat elected statewide was John Sharp as, I believe, comptroller in 1994.
So the Democratic Party in Texas is a pretty big disaster, and the fact that they've all sort of trying to rally behind Alamil and to stop Keisha shows that they're pretty much, at least the party establishment, committed to continuing disaster and losership. But the Republicans are not much better, are they?
Well, we can talk about that in a second. But look, let me make this point. Keisha's main emphasis is on the idea that you have to put the nation and the future before party, and that both parties in this state are controlled by Wall Street. In fact, the Democratic Party is sort of a farm team, which is why we call it a Bush League, sort of a minor league of the Republican Party, because they have essentially not only allowed the Republicans to take the state, but many of the Democrats who get elected imitate the Republican policies. And this is what Alamil is doing. There's no real difference. You know, for example, one of the most important points Keisha's made, which goes back to what Lyndon LaRouche said after 2008, after the crash of 2008, is that we need Glass-Steagall. We need to re-regulate the banking system. We need to shut down the speculative casino economy. Now, Alamil says he's anti-Wall Street. Well, what about Glass-Steagall? Not a word. It's just a slogan that he's against Wall Street. In fact, everything he would support, including free trade agreements, including fracking, including extending the fracking operation that's now going on in Texas into Mexico, because the oil multinationals broke the back of the Mexican Constitution by taking the oil and gas away from the people of Mexico and putting it on the private market. So now there'll be some investment in Mexico to do what? To produce oil and gas, for the proceeds of which will never reach the Mexican people, but will go to Exxon and BP and Shell and international oil companies. So what you have here is a Wall Street candidate who rejects the very simple policies that are necessary as a starting point for restoring the country. Now, Keisha's other point on this is this taps into a rich tradition in Texas of FDR-style Democrats who saw government as an instrument of the good, provided it was on the side of the people and not the special interests. And in this, Bruce, you know this from the inside, from your time here, we had people in the past, like Wright Patman, like Jim Wright, who, by the way, was basically run out of the House of Representatives when he was the Speaker, because he was trying to stop people from losing their homes in the S&L crisis in the mid-'80s. A perfect example is a friend of mine, the late Senator Ralph Yarborough, who fought against the Bush family in 1964, successfully defeated George Herbert Walker Bush in a Senate race in Texas by campaigning against the Wall Street Yankee interloper and in favor of defending the people. Henry B. Gonzalez is another perfect example of that tradition. So this is a tradition in Texas which, again, Keisha evokes in people. When she speaks, people say, yeah, my father used to talk about that. And it's also, by the way, connected to the John Kennedy tradition, which is very strong in Texas, not just because of the assassination in Dallas, but because of the effects of NASA and the Kennedy's desire to move the country by investing in physical economy and infrastructure. So these are all themes that resonate. Now, you brought up the Republicans. The Republican Party in Texas is pure Bush. And this goes back to Bush Sr. And his migration down here from Connecticut. He and James Baker III and a few others created the modern Republican Party, which is the one that took over Texas. You have George W. Bush, who became the governor here and then the president. Now they're trying another generation with George P. Bush. But this Republican Party is pure Wall Street, pure speculation and looting, and regime change wars, which, by the way, is the same as the Obama policy.
Right. That was my point. So given that, it's not exactly like the Republicans would be too happy with Keisha having to face Keisha in the general election in November.
Well, the Republicans have grown in Texas because of the incompetence and idiocy of the Democrats. So if you have someone who's not an incompetent idiot at the top of the ticket, that's something that will threaten the Republicans. But also, look, the Republican Party, for all its bluster about impeaching Obama, and you can take this character Steve Stockman or three or four Republican congressmen in Texas who've all said, oh, Obama, he's violated the Constitution, he should be impeached. Not one of them has moved to do anything about it. It's a campaign gimmick. It's a fundraising ploy. They have no intention of throwing Obama out. But if you get a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, if Keisha wins the runoff on May 27th, then it becomes a totally different situation. And John Cornyn, who thinks he's the Marlboro man, but you know is really quite a pathetic character, John Cornyn is exposed with, just like the Texas Democratic Party, with his pants down around his ankles. So I think that the Republicans aren't too happy with this prospect of Keisha winning the nomination.
Now, there's a lot of talk in the press. I know there was an article in the New York Times just yesterday about the Obama campaign efforts to try and turn Texas blue. They're talking about the demographic change in Texas and how it's only a matter of time because of the growth of the Hispanic population, that Texas will become a Democratic Party state. What's actually happening with that? Is there anything to that, or is that just a bunch of smoke being blown out of the Eastern establishment?
Well, part of it is just money. You know, they've set up the Texas Future Project, which is trying to bring money from Silicon Valley and Hollywood into Texas to help the Democrats. But you know, a lot of this thing is as you say, smoke and mirrors and not really serious. And there's a reason for it. It's the methodology. You know, Obama was considered an innovator in his campaign approach to the 2012 election. And of course, compared to Karl Rove, they were much smarter. But what did they do? They treat human beings as statistical categories. They leave out mind completely. So they say most Hispanics should be Democrats. Therefore, we have to tap into that. Therefore, because Hispanics are becoming the majority in Texas, Texas will be a Democratic state. And then they treat the Hispanic voters as though they're slaves on the plantation. So it doesn't translate. The question you have to ask yourself in Texas is, if you were serious about recruiting the Hispanic majority into a political party, what are the concerns of the Hispanic population? They're the same as everyone else. Job security, education, decent health care, a future. You have a lot of Hispanic veterans in this state who have no access to health care between Obamacare and the collapse of the VA system. So the idea that you can just use numbers to win an election is a fraud, and that's not really what they do. They go, it's much more cynical than that. They use that as the cover to actually try and find who are the people that they can count on, that will be loyal to whoever the Democratic Party puts up as a candidate, or more specifically, whoever's loyal to Obama. And then they find what the susceptibilities of those people are. Do they believe that there should be immigration reform? Do they like being appealed to on women's rights? And so they have these interest groups, and they determine by name who their real loyal voters will be, and that's what they target. And this New York Times article says they may make 7 to 12 phone calls to those people to remind them they have to vote. Now, this has nothing
to
do.
If they don't go out and vote on their own, they'll vote for them.
Yeah, why not?
And it's my understanding this is not really activating the population. Only 3% of the registered voters or eligible voters voted in the March primary, and they expect a much lower turnout in this one. Let me just tell our listeners that you're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's May 17th, and we're speaking with Harley Schlanger, Western State spokesman for Lyndon LaRouche, and we're discussing the upcoming world-shaking political election campaign going on in Texas right now, where Keisha Rogers, longtime LaRouche supporter, is on the cusp of trying to take the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. All right, we've talked a lot about the dynamic here in Texas, but what I'm would like you to address, you've already said some of this, but I think it's really important to underscore it, that this is not just an election that people in Texas should be concerned about, that this really is something that has national and international implications, especially because you have Obama, whose policies are failed everywhere. They're failed in the United States from the standpoint of the economy. They're failing internationally by his one disaster after another, from Syria to Ukraine and so forth. You can name them. And that you have a dynamic in the world where the world is sort of looking at the United States after two terms of Bush and a previous term of Daddy Bush and now 1.5 terms of Obama, and they're sort of wondering what's happened to the Temple of Liberty and the Beacon of Hope for all mankind. So why don't you talk a little bit about how Keisha's election here and even her campaign, the importance of that for people not only in the United States but also internationally?
Well, and one of the best ways to look at it, I wrote about this in an article in the Executive Intelligence Review, that after her primary victory in 2010, the London Economist, which is the magazine established by the Rothschilds bankers to be sort of the spokes voice for the city of London, ran an article trying to mock Keisha's statement that the fight today is the American Republic versus the British Empire. But that's precisely how it's seen by the enemies of this country, that you can't allow actual national policy discussions of the sort that Lyndon LaRouche has introduced and that Keisha is bringing into her campaign. You can't allow that. You've got to keep the American people stupid and subservient by having them debate endlessly non-important issues. Now, the importance, therefore, of Keisha's election in 2010, when she won against two Democratic opponents in the primary, she got over 50%. You could say after that moment that over 50% of the Democrats who cared to vote in a primary election in a congressional district voted for a candidate who said Obama has to go and we have to restore NASA. Now, that was in itself a shock, but this time it is a Senate race, but also things have evolved very rapidly in terms of the Obama administration, as you were pointing out. In 2010, there was still some illusions existing in Europe about Obama. Those are mostly gone now. The Europeans are very fearful that Obama is going to blunder them into a war with Russia. So they're watching closely to see what's going to happen. But the other side of this, and this is probably the most important thing for our listeners to understand when we talked about earlier the intent of the campaign to shift the discussion, that what we're seeing is a moment of opportunity to break the power of this British party above the two-party system because of the enormity of the scandals that are now emerging that affect both parties. You know, if you look at the cover-up of the 9/11 done by Bush and Cheney, the Saudi role in it, despite the Senate investigation into that, that they suppressed, they've classified it, and Obama continued the classification, You look at Obama's role in suppressing the report on Cheney's role directly in torture. You look at the Obama role in continuing and expanding the powers of the National Security Agency in wiretapping and eavesdropping. You look at Obama's expansion over Bush of the idea of the unitary executive, that the president can violate the Constitution by deciding when and where to go to war without even consulting the Congress. Those are all impeachable acts. Now, what's happened is that the Republicans, for opportunistic political gain, will criticize Obama on these things, make a big dog and pony show about it, but not take the constitutional remedy for this, which is impeachment. And the Democrats have been forced to cover up for Obama, to lie for him, to allow the lies about Benghazi and drones and everything else to continue. What we're seeing now are cracks on the Democratic side. You know, just as an example, two leading Democrats are opposing the man Obama's trying to appoint to the appeals court, one of the highest courts in the country, a man named David Barron, who wrote the legal justification for killing American citizens without due process. Now, that's really significant. Do you really want someone on the appeals court of the United States who says that you don't have to prove someone's guilty before you kill them? So you have Senator Udall and Senator Wyden joining with Senator Rand Paul to oppose this nomination. You have, likewise, a number of Democrats who are saying that they should participate in the Benghazi hearing. So we're seeing some cracks occur. Feinstein demanding that the White House release the report on Cheney's torture. We're seeing some cracks in the Democratic Party. And a victory by Keisha could embolden Democrats who recognize that clinging to Obama is the kiss of death in the 2014 elections, and maybe the kiss of death for the nation if we end up in a thermonuclear war under Obama. So that's the magnitude of the potential change that would be reflected by a victory by Keisha.
And this, obviously, if Keisha were to win this election, it would also send the message to people around the world who somehow think that despite the fact that Obama has lost his luster, so to speak, he still seems to be able to get away with whatever he wants. I mean, LaRouche has pointed out many times, you've got two-thirds of the American people actually absolutely despise Obama. Then why hasn't he been kicked out altogether? You mentioned the tradition of Texas Democrats like Ralph Yarborough and Wright Patman, and I'm often think back to the time when Jimmy Carter was president and, canceled water projects and one disaster after another, and it wasn't the Republicans that threw him out. He had Democrat control of both the Senate and the House, and it was the Democrats that deserted him because he was a disaster for the party. And so there's a tradition in Texas of putting nation over party, and that's really what Keisha's tapping into here.
Well, and Lyndon LaRouche talked about the need for a Nixon moment, referring to the fact, and people should remember this, Watergate, the burglary and arrests occurred in June 1972, before the November 72 elections. Everyone knew that the White House was involved in some way in some event at the Watergate headquarters of the Democratic National Committee. Nixon won a huge landslide in November 72, and it wasn't until almost 2 years later, in August 74, that Nixon was forced to leave, but it was Republicans who went to him and said, if you don't leave, you'll be impeached and probably convicted, and you may go to jail. Now, we need that kind of Nixon moment where Democrats put the nation ahead of their partisan concerns. Now, here's one of the other things. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, an Akeisha victory in Texas will have the effect of putting a little bit of spine in those Democrats, that if they go out and take the lead, the people will back them. If they continue to cower before Obama, the people are just going to hate them for it.
Well, and that you have to get at this question of what is it the Democrats are afraid of? You know, they say they're afraid of the Tea Party, the Republicans. You've got to protect people from the Republicans, and then they're impotent to do that. The only thing that Obama has passed in terms of legislation is essentially what was the old Republican health care bill, which is a mandate to have to buy private insurance while they cut every form of medical care, including not just cutting it, but actually eliminating whole sectors of medical care, condemning the poor, the sick, and the elderly to death. So what is it that they're really afraid of?
Well, just on that, we had a couple of Keisha campaign workers went to a single-payer meeting here in Houston today, and Alan Mills' campaign was asked to attend, but nobody showed up. But he did send a message saying that he would be for single-payer when public opinion comes around to be supporting single-payer. So Alan Mills takes exactly the opposite approach of Keisha, who went in there and denounced the Obamacare for what it is, a Nazi healthcare policy, and stood up boldly for a single-payer program which would put the health and welfare of the American people above the interests of Wall Street and the insurance companies.
Well, and then you look at this question of people who say, well, Obama's had to stand up against unprecedented, nasty Republicans. Well, he never stood up against them. Never. He never fought it out from the very beginning. When he had a majority in both houses of Congress, he had a 70 to 80% popularity based on the media buildup of his image from the election. He could have pushed through Glass-Steagall. He could have pushed through massive projects of the sort of NWAPA or space program, investment in water management, so that we wouldn't have the problems we face with the drought now. Instead, he went along with the policies of Wall Street, of bail out the banks first, of cut the budget, of pay as you go, these idiotic themes that have gotten us deeper and deeper in crisis. So why would Democrats cling to that? And you know, it doesn't make sense that it's because of their fear of Rush Limbaugh and the Tea Party. It's really more profound. They refuse to offer candidates who will challenge the population to change. And that's what Keisha represents. This is the hallmark of Lyndon LaRouche's presidential campaigns. You don't talk about what you think people want. You identify for them what they need. This is the importance of forecasting, the importance of looking at human beings not as numbers to be manipulated, but as absolutely essential creative beings who are necessary for us to have a better future 50, 100 years from now. And so this is the change in the political universe that has to take place if the United States is going to survive. And you know, Texas is a tough place to do it. It's a very difficult state in terms of poor education and polarization and poverty and corrupt media, corrupt political institutions. So if we can break it here, then it will indicate that everything is up for grabs. All the axioms have to go out the window. And I think that's why this is so important. And the listeners of this program should do anything they can between now and really the beginning of next week, because early voting starts on Monday, to contact anyone you know in Texas, family members, friends, old associates, to get them to vote for Keisha, to contribute money, to send letters to the editor if you live in Texas, of your local paper, to do anything possible to help us win this election, because this is the only chance we have, or the best chance we have right now, to shift the global strategic situation from within the United States.
Now, you mentioned something interesting, which is that Texas is a difficult state to do this because of the corruption and the poverty and the lack of education and sort of the popularly held view that the most popular thing to be in Texas is stupid. But Keisha sort of goes counter to that, right? And she's bringing into her campaign actually trying to inspire people around the highest concepts of classical culture and so forth. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, what she's done to bring in the idea of a new renaissance into the culture of Texas, which people would generally think was kind of a fool's errand, but actually is the right way to approach the people of Texas.
Well, it's funny. There's an interesting anecdote on this that Keisha was invited to speak at a church in the Rio Grande Valley, and before she spoke, she sang a spiritual. And from the videos of that event, you could see people moved by what she did. People very excited, very, you know, profoundly moved. Here's a candidate for public office who comes and sings something about uplifting the spirit to the level of the godly. Now, what one of her opponents or someone who doesn't like her said, she's pandering to the religious right by singing a spiritual. So that's what you're talking about, the stupid ignorance of most political pronouncements in this state. You know, the second example is the mass leaflet she's getting out where she's talking about things that most people never thought of. Atmospheric or above atmospheric flows, rivers of water that can be tapped into. The importance of the solar dynamics interacting with the Earth's atmosphere based on our position in the galaxy as being determining factors of what's going to happen with agriculture, with physical production in the future. These are things that people don't consider within the realm of politics. But it was only 50 years ago that the whole nation was mobilized by President Kennedy with his appeals to go into space, that the new frontier included, among other things, the idea that we're going to cure poverty, cure disease, change the economic conditions for all of the world, including the recently freed colonial countries. We're going to do it through science and technology and culture. And what was considered smart and good then is today considered impractical and a sign of being out of touch with reality. You know, you get these columnists in Texas who say Keisha's part of the wingnut fringe of politics. Why? Because she talks about going into space, because she talks about the immortality of the human species and the responsibility for every human being to take that as their mission, to be part of that immortality. That's somehow considered cultish or kookish. And it just shows how far we've slipped even from where we were 50 years ago as a political culture.
I think it's important also to note that no matter how much they try and ridicule Keisha, they have to admit, even the media that covers her campaign has to admit that, you know, despite the fact that they say all these things about her, she's stubbornly persistent, and they can't seem to shake her, and she continues to get support, and they have to be worried about her, which is why Alamil is spending, you know, huge amounts of money. I mean, $10 million just for a primary and runoff race, even though Texas is a big state, is a ridiculous amount of money compared to, I think, the $54,000 or $60,000 that Keisha's raised and spent so far.
Well, we're probably up to about $80,000 by now, Bruce, $75,000 to $80,000, and I think we need to get, we really do need more. But the point is that this is one of the shortfalls that we have. We don't have enough money and we don't have enough people. So we're up against certain constraints. But what Keisha has demonstrated is that with her quality of leadership, her combativeness, her persistence, and the fact that she does it in a way that is not grudging or hostile to the voters, but it was described as, I can't remember the charmingly or disarmingly charming. Now, when you hear the word cultish, which is has been thrown out to attack LaRouche for a long time, you expect some dogmatic, hard-nosed, unyielding person. What you see in Keisha is a commitment to principle. Doesn't mean that you have to be nasty. In fact, Keisha is a very loving person, and you see that come out in her activity. So, you know, this question of how to campaign, how to change the political culture, it's a very complex question because we've been the victim of, as LaRouche has been pointing out, over 100 years of destruction of education, with one of the key moments of that being the emergence of David Hilbert in 1900 and the attempt to turn all science into mathematics. And when you talk about these things, people scratch their head and say, what does that have to do with politics? It has everything to do with how you think, and the way you think is why you've been making bad decisions in politics. And so I think this is the question of the cultural component of Keisha's organizing and the way the LaRouche movement approaches everything. And it's not practical in the least, but being practical is what's destroyed the country and potentially destroyed human civilization.
Right. So, I think that's what Keisha keeps proving in every single one of her campaigns. I mean, she didn't do the practical thing in 2010 when she ran for the nomination in the 22nd district, and she didn't do it again in 2012 when they tried to gang up on her to keep her from repeating what she did 2 years earlier. And I think she caught them by surprise by running for Senate. And even though there were four candidates or five candidates in the primary, and she came in second, beating several candidates.
Bruce, she beat some candidates who were endorsed by major newspapers. So
right. So the voters of Texas, at least the what Roosevelt used to call the forgotten man, people who are sort of outside the political purviews, except for being considered pawns that can be manipulated around, you know, on these big data digital campaigns. But when she's actually touching people's hearts, and that's producing, in a sense, a new species of voter in Texas, which isn't red or blue, but is an actual human being.
And that's where you can see the potential to have a breakout. That if we can have a campaign succeed like this in Texas, and let me be honest, we're still a long shot to win. We're up against a guy who's spending lots and lots of money, where the party apparatus has been deployed against us, where a vote fraud machine is in place, so if it's a close election, they can steal it from us. In a state where fewer and fewer people are actually paying attention to politics. So all of that goes against us. And yet, when you factor in the inspirational leadership of Keisha and the effect that's had on her campaign team, which is out every single day taking on the population, when you add to that the numbers of people who have come into contact with her and with our organizers, you know, we're in a situation where we can succeed. It would be an upset, but it wouldn't be the greatest shocking event in the world, partly because what we're up against is a very, very bad candidate who, had the Democratic Party had any sense, they would have said, gee, you can take your money and contribute it, but we're not going to support you. Because here's a guy who essentially sold himself to the party by being able to not cost them any money. And he got endorsed by Wendy Davis before the primary because he gave her $35,000. Now, maybe she didn't know this, but about 6 years ago, he gave Rick Perry $75,000. So, you know, she was a cheap date compared to Rick Perry for Alamil. So the Democratic Party didn't do its due diligence. And so the door is open, and we've got to keep fighting. We've got, I guess, 9 days before the election. We got the Memorial Day weekend. Early voting starts next Monday. But this is an opportunity where small groups of people can make a difference by getting into the fight.
So why don't you tell us, we have about 6 minutes left here, you know, what's actually planned over the next 10 days? How are we getting out, trying to get the mass effect? I guess we're doing banner rallies in different places. We have radio ads going out. What's our strategy here?
Well, we're deployed extensively right now in the major cities of Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area, San Antonio, Houston, and Austin. We have squads out every day. We're doing some very high-visibility events, rallies, banners over overpasses. We have radio ads going out all over the state. You know, television is prohibitive, but the radio, we have three ads, one an endorsement of Keisha by Lyndon LaRouche, and then two ads in Keisha's voice. We have two different Spanish language ads. One is an endorsement of Keisha by a very prominent Latino activist, and the other is one of Keisha's statements read by a Spanish speaker. Beyond that, we have a major event this coming Tuesday in Houston, a campaign event. I think the other thing is that we're going into a mass circulation of leaflets, a statement from Lyndon LaRouche endorsing Keisha, and secondly, a statement from Keisha where she's encouraging voters to stop thinking small and to take over their own life, take sovereignty over their future by joining the campaign and laying out some of the scientific initiatives that could be taken if we had Glass-Steagall and a credit policy. So I think, and we're going to go for either somewhere between 50 and 100,000 circulation of that. Now, if there are going to be as few voters as they're projecting, between 200 and 240,000, we've got to get about 140,000 people out to vote. And essentially that means we're out to expand the numbers of people who vote while the Democratic Party leadership is trying to contract the numbers who will vote. So that's the fight we have.
Right. If we actually pull that off and Keisha does get a victory, I think that sends a. I think that could be the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of the or to choose another metaphor, opening the floodgates to actually chase Obama out. Because LaRouche has made the point that Obama has failed. He's no longer useful for these puppet masters in the City of London for the Queen of England. He's not doing his job, and that's the good news. The bad news is that if he doesn't do his job, then she dumps him, then the British Empire is going to move in for an even more aggressive war policy and dictatorship policy. So,
which is why we have to make the point that Obama going occurs at the same time we take down the British Empire with Glass-Steagall. I think the important point here is that it's Lyndon LaRouche's assessment from his sources and contacts and his own forecasting that Obama is closer to being dumped than ever before. And so those people who think the future is a linear extrapolation from the past are missing the fact that there are nonlinear breaks that occur in history. For example, the resignation of Nixon. And so things that are not planned or predestined happen, dependent on the intent of individuals to make them happen. And so that's why there's a possibility.
Right, and also that as we dump Obama, we're not just opening it up to more chaos, because you don't. But we're actually setting the standard for what kind of leadership will replace it. And this would give a lot of courage and moral inspiration to any Democratic leader out there who has been sort of laying low and compromising and holding back from actually doing the kinds of things Keisha does and LaRouche does, that this will actually set the standard for a new leadership. That is, that we're getting Obama out, but we're actually replacing it with something that is good as opposed to just opening up the door to more chaos.
Well, people should go to the Keisha Rogers for Senate website and take a look at what's there. You can download the leaflet. I don't care if you're in Alaska or Montana, you can get the leaflet out. Get people, you know, we want to create a change in the political culture in this country. And you can participate in that. You can contribute online from the Keisha Rogers for Senate website. And anything that people can do in this brief period ahead could be decisive.
All right. Well, we have about a little over 1 minute left. Besides from going to Keisha's website and getting out the leaflets, you suggested that people, a lot of people have relatives or friends or so forth in Texas, that they contact them and get them in touch with us. What's the number they should call? Do you have a campaign number they should call?
Well, you caught me off guard there. You can call our main office number in Houston, which is 713-541-2907. That's not exactly the campaign number, but you can call that number, 713-541-2907.
And, right. And they can go to KeishaRogersForSenate.com. Is that the website?
Yeah, that's the website.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been good having you on, Harley, and you make a very good guest as well as a good host. But I don't think we put you on the spot too much, and we're all looking forward to seeing what happens on May 27th. But in the meantime, we're going to be doing everything we can to make sure that it has the right outcome. So,
thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, thank you for being on, and thanks for everybody listening to The LaRouche Show.